Welcome to Bearcat QHSC Training LLC's weekly podcast, where you can learn about quality health, safety, and environmental training and how you can make it fit your day-to-day life. If you want to learn more about Bearcat QHSC Training LLC, please visit us at www.bearcatqhsc.com. Thank you for joining us today, January 26, 2024. We're going to get it on. Today, we're going to talk about training. What type of training, what type of documentation you need, and frequencies. So if you're interested in that, stay tuned. Let's hear from our sponsor, Back to Beautiful, out of Dade City, Florida, family-owned business, and they take great pride in their work. They're a small business. They have to. Highly recommend them. This week's podcast sponsor is Back to Beautiful. At Dade City, Florida, Back to Beautiful can bring the beauty back to your life. Did your bathroom lose touch with reality in the 70s? Maybe your kitchen fell out of style in the 80s. Well, Back to Beautiful can bring beauty back to your home and your life. Call them at 863-307-9229. Back to Beautiful. Like I said, family-owned business, they're great. I highly recommend them. I've used them myself. So here we go, training. Depending on who your regulatory agency is and what type of business you conduct, training may be different. If you fall under construction, then you're going to fall under the rules for training for construction industry. MSHA, you're mining, you're going to fall under their rules. General industry, which covers an awful lot, is going to fall under OSHA as well. A little bit different than some of the others. Now, general industry covers just about all manufacturing in the United States. So they're going to require you to train on everything relevant to what you do that OSHA governs. Then you have the EPA or your local agency for environmental protection, depending on where you're at in the United States. In Florida, we have the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and then certain counties have their own groups. They all have very similar requirements for training. You may fall under the control of the FDA, which also has some training requirements, or the USDA. So whatever industry you're in, make sure you're being compliant with all of the regulations. It doesn't hurt to double check or triple check. You know, every now and then we get new people on board and they're like, how come you guys don't have to do this or that? Well, look into it. If you don't know, you might not. Or you might. Most of the areas I represent are general industry, OSHA, FDA, and EPA or DEP. And there's a few others in there too. Sometimes you have Homeland Security regulations. So you really need to be checking to make sure that as new laws come about, whether or not they're applicable to you or not. If someone asks you about an air permit and you've had a study, then you can show them that you've had a study and that you've had no significant changes since that study. Should be fine if it says you don't need an air permit. And if you need one, well, you have trained people on it, right? You have trained people on everything you got going on, pretty much. So, just about every agency requires training to be signed off on. And there's a couple that will accept electronic signatures. I like using a system called Alchemy. I'm not sponsored. I'm not pushing them. They're not the only folks out there. I've used it the most. It's the one I'm most comfortable with. Therefore, I like the reporting and record keeping of it. And I can not only pull up each monthly training and annual, semi-annual, and the ones that are only every 3 years, but I can pull up each individual that took it, pull up their scores. I can even pull up each individual and how they answered each question. So if they did not pass or if they missed something, I can go back and see if there's a trend on people missing certain questions and then change those questions. Or improve the training so they can answer those questions appropriately. It's all part of the game. Every year, we train on the same exact thing every year, but every year, I update the training. Whether there's a change or not, I try to change up the pictures, I try to change up some questions, just to make it a little bit easier to get through. If you have certain permits, you need to train your people to at least understand what they are and what contributes to having a good or bad inspection. You want to make sure the people on the floor, the people actually doing the work, understand all of these things. And then the management understands all of these things. There's nothing more aggravating when you train on something quarterly and someone who's been there a couple of years says, "Oh, I've never had that training." Or a manager says, "I don't remember that training." So what do you do to make it memorable, right? Sometimes it's a picture or a statement within the presentation that gets their attention. Little things that you can do to help make it easier. I prefer people to come to live trainings versus taking them online. They're allowed to take it online, and there are some circumstances that requires it, but the live trainings are the best. I'm going to be right there, or another subject matter expert's going to be right there, and we're going to be able to answer any questions, point people in the right direction, maybe give them some hands-on training on a system on how to report things. It's a lot more valuable than just taking it online, especially when I see someone's taking it online like 8 times and finally passing the 8th time. You know that they didn't take the training. They just tried to pass the exam. One thing I did to make that harder is the test questions aren't all at the end. I salt the presentation with them, and there's a question every so many slides, depending on the number of questions I need. I try to put enough questions in to where they can get at least 1, maybe 2 wrong and still pass the course. This is how I do it. Another thing that is important is making sure that when you see that not everyone got the question right, that you reiterate what the question was and what the answer would be so that everybody's got an understanding. All these things help. Typically, most of your government agencies are going to want to see your training 3 to 5 years. That's standard rule, keep them at least 5 years. If it's forklift training, you might want to keep it longer than that. You certify every 3 years on forklifts, typically. We do have the refresher training in the classroom every year, but every 3 years, there's recertifications. So you might want to keep 9 years of those so that you can show 2 or 3 certifications for each individual that have been there long enough to do that. Fortunately, where I'm at, there's a lot of tenure, so there's people that have been certified multiple times. I've been with, 15 years, a little over 15 years, so that right there helps out an awful lot, knowing the history, knowing where everything's at. Organizing the documentation in a manner that's easy to get to. I keep no paper. It gets scanned and it gets filed, and it's very easy to pick up. It's backed up every night. There's no need to have 20 copies. This is what it is. We use a system that helps us document inspections and trainings and other things like that. So we put that in there. It reminds me, I can't forget, hey, you know what, in 3 months, so-and-so needs this training. We also have a rule that if you cannot make the training, the live training, whether you're on PTO or you're sick or whatever, you're required to complete the training within 5 days of returning to work. So if you were out on, say, family medical leave or short-term or long-term disability, when you come back, you've got a lot of training to make up within 5 days, depending on how long you were out. Really, really important that no one misses out on the training. So we have orientation training. So as soon as you are hired, you have to complete the orientation training prior to going out on the floor and working. Now, you can have a tour of the facility, but you can't go out there and work until you've completed the training. I break up the training into 4 orientation training groups. Within the training, I have set breaks where it'll say, hey, it's time to take a break. And you get up, take a break, come back, get right back at it. I want to keep people from sitting there and dying in front of the computer or the instructor. Then in between segments, there being 4, I want to take a tour and show them the safety things that they just learned about. Whether it be eyewash stations, first aid kits, emergency showers, fire extinguishers, emergency exit routes, shelter routes and locations, all that type of stuff is what we want to kind of point out. Where you need to wear reflective clothing, where you don't, where you need to wear certain PPE and where you don't. So they have full understanding. And like I said, I have a specific type of thing I'm going to do in between each one. If you need forklift training or some other type of power industrial training, I'm not going to do it on orientation day. If your job requires you to have that before you start, we'll do it the next day at the earliest. It's too much. You just kill these people, you know? Forklift training has 3 to 4 hours of classroom training. And then there's probably an hour to hour and a half of driving tests and observations, depending on, you know, the amount of experience they have. In most cases, at a minimum, they're going to do the OSHA minimum training. If I feel they need more, they'll do more. I always add on site-specific. If we have a certain size pallet that's hard to deal with, if we have certain materials that come in that are hard to deal with, I make sure they understand those and where the center balance is and how high to go and so on and so forth. We have a prohibition of stacking more than 2 high. Racking systems and stacking more than 2 high on heavy stuff, you gotta think that pallet is rated for a certain weight, so you don't want to overload it by multi-tiering. Stacking of pallets, right? It depends on the weight of the stuff. You might have something light enough where it's safe, but in most cases, we don't. If you have a fatality or a very major incident, one of the first things they ask is, what training did they have and who provided it? I don't sign off on anybody's training if I'm not confident that they can operate safely. I've had people I've refused to sign off on a certification for a high reach lift or aerial work platform because they were scared of heights. If someone's scared of heights, why would you license them to operate a scissor lift, a high reach lift of some sort, aerial work platform? Why? It doesn't make sense. You're not going to make them climb a ladder to the roof if they're scared of heights. So you got to use a little common sense too. Sometimes I've had a couple instances where I've had to ask a supervisor, how bad does this person need this training? They say it's a job requirement, then I'll take the time and I'll make sure they got it. But sometimes you just got to say, nope, they can't do it. Sad. Sometimes it happens. So that's really a lot on training, on something that's a simple topic that can take a lot of time to do. We have, I make sure there's an up-to-date annual training calendar. Everybody knows how many times on that one day a week or a month, I'm sorry, we're going to do training. I have one facility, we have to do it 3 times a day. I have one facility, we do it 2x a day. I have one spot where it's once. Just depends on the number of people and what shifts they're on. You want to accommodate people for their shifts. So you want third shift coming in on, staying late on first. You don't want first coming in early on third. And you don't want second having to wait until third or do it in the middle of first. Should be accommodating. One of my locations, it's 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. One is 6 a.m., 10:30 a.m., and 2 p.m. And the other one is just in the afternoon, normally around 1 o'clock. So it just depends what's going on, what people's schedules are like, and how you can hit everybody and get them done every month. Record keeping is important. If you use sign-in sheets, that's great. If you have electronic system, that's great. As long as you have documentation of the training, you're in pretty good shape. Most people want a sign-in sheet with people's actual signatures. Some of the training has to be hands-on. You can't certify in a forklift or aero work platform without having hands-on training. You can't train somebody on spills and spill prevention without having spill drills and some hands-on training. Bloodborne pathogens, first aid, CPR, you've got to do some practice hands-on stuff to get certified. That's how it goes, and it's necessary. How can you have an emergency response plan for fires and not do a fire drill? Or for tornadoes or hurricanes and not have a shelter drill? You just can't. You have to do that. And that's documented training that people are going to want to see. Auditors. If you have a one-stop shop or as few spots as possible where you can pull things up electronically, your audits will go a lot faster than if you're doing the old binder system or spreadsheets. Just saying. So if you want more on how to set up a training program, how to conduct training, all that happy stuff, give me a holler. Go to my website, find me. We'll help you out. It's not very difficult. It doesn't take that long. If you just need basic OSHA training, that's really simple. You may not need to train on everything that OSHA has out there if it's not applicable to your site. But then you might have programs that require a lot more training and testing, like a hearing conservation program or a forced air respirator program, things like that. All right, I appreciate y'all. Y'all take care. If you like it, share it. We look forward to seeing your feedback, so don't be shy now. And this concludes this week's podcast for Bearcat QHSE Training LLC. Thank you so much for joining in. If you liked it, share it. Help spread the love. Bearcat QHSE Training LLC at bearcatqhse.com. And your host, David Whitcomb.